welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting programs from radio's golden era. I'm your host, Mark Lavonier, bringing you an hour of mystery. Later on, it's Nightbeat from 1950, but first an episode of yours truly, Johnny Dollar, called The Evaporated Clue Matter, a CBS broadcast from January 17, 1960.
Johnny Dollar.
Henry Bascom, Johnny, at Four State Insurance Company.
Well, hiya, Hank. It's been a long, long time.
Yeah, I know. Johnny, are you free to come down here and look into something for us?
Henry, as long as somebody pays my expense account, of course, a nice fat fee, I'll go anywhere.
Johnny, for once, you're not going to be able to pad that freewheeling expense account of yours.
Any bets? Why not?
Because the investigation I want you to make is right here in New York City.
Oh, well, there's always the fee to fall back on. How much?
Usual percentage of the face value of the policy.
Okay, only how big is the policy?
Johnny, hold your hat. It's about 200... Well, I mean, it's
what?
Just under...
200 bucks?
Johnny.
Listen, Hank, my cut on a policy as small as that wouldn't buy me a sandwich and a cup of coffee.
No, listen.
And I suppose you'll question every penny I put on the expense account.
Look, you didn't...
Why don't you just pay it off and save you and me and the company a lot of time, labor, and soap? What kind of a policy is it?
Straight life.
Huh?
But listen, you didn't let me finish. The face value of this policy is a little under $200,000.
200? Oh.
Yeah. Well?
Hank, my buddy, my bosom pal... For an assignment like that, for the nice commission it's going to pay me, I'd walk to New York.
Only maybe you better grab a plane or a train instead.
Right, I'll be there.
CBS Radio brings you Bob Bailey in the exciting adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account. America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
And now, Act One of yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar to the Four State Insurance Company, New York City office. The following is an account of expenses incurred during my investigation of the evaporated clue matter. Expense account item 1, 5 1/4 for a taxi out to Bradley Field. Item 2, $13 even for a plane to New York and a limousine to Grand Central Station. Then I walked over to Henry's office at 500 Fifth Avenue at the corner of 42nd Street.
Oh, Johnny, you really made time. Sit down.
Yeah, thanks. That's because of the tempting offer you made to me over the phone. A policy worth 200 grand.
Huh? 189,000 to be exact.
Straight line.
Mm-hmm.
On whom?
Mr. Jonathan R. Kenworthy.
Kenworthy?
Very, very wealthy. Retired some years ago after selling off the Kenworthy copper mills.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Been living here in New York for the past 20 years. Big fancy apartment overlooking the East River. 714 East 52nd Street.
Hmm, expensive neighborhood.
Oh, I told you he was loaded.
So what happened to him?
He was murdered, Johnny.
Oh?
Yeah.
And who was the beneficiary of this nice, juicy hunk of insurance?
His grandson, Carlton M. Kenworthy. And that's the answer to your next question, too.
Now, what do you mean by that? I was going to ask you if you or the police have any idea who might have
killed him.
Yeah, that's right.
And I told you, this young Carlton Kenworthy, his grandson, who is also the sole heir to all the rest of his estate.
Oh, no, wait a minute. That's a pretty strong accusation, Hank. You have any proof?
None whatsoever. Nor have the police.
But I take it you figure that Carlton had the motive and the opportunity.
And a perfect alibi.
Oh?
Yeah.
Then what makes you think he did it? And the police, too?
And the police, too.
Well?
Motive, Johnny. It's as simple as that.
All right, keep talking.
It's simply that nobody else in the world could possibly benefit by old Mr. Kenworthy's death.
Well, now, Hank...
Plus the fact that he had no enemies. None whatsoever, Johnny.
You sound pretty sure of that.
I am. I not only knew him, but I knew a great deal about him.
Oh, but after all, a man who's been head of a company as big as Kenworthy Copper Mills... You know, some disgruntled employee with some imaginary grievances.
Over 20 years ago?
Well...
But even if he'd only retired from that business last month, I'd still say no. Kenworthy was one of the best-loved men I've ever heard of. As for his employees, why, they're the ones he left the business to. He never had a strike, any other kind of labor troubles, despite the size of his plant, because he treated every one of his employees like one of his own kids. That sounds pretty unusual, Johnny, I know. But he was an unusual man.
Oh, I see. But now about this grandson, Carlton Kenworthy...
Well, about as useless a hunk of human being as I've ever seen.
How old is he?
Oh, 30, 32 or 3.
What's he do for a living?
Well, that's the point. He doesn't. Nor has he ever done anything. Despite the fine education, all the world travel his grandfather lavished on him. Johnny, if you want a perfect definition of a playboy, I can give it to you in three words. Carlton, Manson, Kenworthy.
And he gets the whole estate as well as the insurance.
He's known in every nightclub on Manhattan Island. He and that leech Allen something or other who pals around with him.
Allen?
Yeah, Barker or Baxter or something. Theaters, nightclubs, expensive restaurants, all the racetracks when they're open, wherever they're open. And they toss money around like confetti.
Where does Carlton get it?
From his grandfather, who's always sponging off.
What about this pal of his? It's Allen, whatever his name is.
Barker. That's his name, Allen Barker.
Well?
He sponges off Carlton. Oh, they're quite a pair, Johnny.
Well, did the grandfather approve of this kind of stuff?
I don't think he really knew what was going on. According to the old man's attorney, who is a friend of mine, he was led to believe that Carlton was investing in various business ventures. Oh. The point is, the boy needed money. And the surest way of getting it, plenty of it, was by having his grandfather dead.
Yeah, well, you've built up quite a case, Hank, but it still isn't enough to hang him, not by a long shot. Have the police been able to pin anything on him?
Not yet, apparently. I told you he has a perfect alibi.
When did it happen?
Last Tuesday.
Who's handling the police investigation?
Lieutenant Randolph Singer at the...
Randy Singer? Great. Randy just happens to be one of the best homicide men in this fair city of yours.
Well, he certainly hasn't impressed
me. If they've got him working on it, and if you have got a case against Carlton Kenworthy... Hank, I'll see you later.
Where are you going, Johnny?
Over to see Randy Singer.
Sure, Johnny, I'm just as sure as your friend Hank at the insurance company.
Why, Randy?
Well, the way that boy played around. Cost him a fortune. Even more than his grandfather gave him.
You sure of that?
What do you mean?
Well, the way I get it, Grandpa gave him plenty.
Yeah, but Carlton is up to his ears in debt. Every time the boys raid a plush gambling joint, there he is. He and that hanger-on of his, Allen Barker. Like peas in a pod, those two.
Then he probably welcomed the raids. Sure. Probably kept him from having to pay off some of his losses.
Yeah, he's still in up to his ears. And as long as he's the only one who could possibly benefit from Grandpappy's death, as long as we're sure that nobody else had any reason for killing him, and we are...
How and when and where was he killed?
Tuesday night in his apartment. He was struck on the back of the head with a heavy wrought iron poker from the fireplace. One good wallop and he was done for.
Hank says that Carlton has an alibi.
Yeah, airtight. I checked it every way I can. From here, that is.
And where's your case against him?
But if you can break that alibi...
But Randy, if you've checked it out...
I said from here. But if that company of yours will pay your expenses to Alaska...
Alaska?
That's right.
Oh, look, with such flimsy evidence...
Will you do it, Johnny?
But now listen,
just
Randy...
Just to, let's say, to get me off the hook.
But I'm still not convinced that...
Johnny...
Okay, Randy, sure.
Act two of yours truly, Johnny Dollar, in a moment.
Meet star Stuart Irwin.
Nothing's worse for an actor than a nasty cold. To feel better quickly, I take wonderful four-way cold tablets. The fast way to relieve cold distress.
Right. Tests of all the leading cold tablets proved four-way fastest acting. Four-way starts in minutes to relieve muscular pains, headache, reduce fever, calm upset stomach, also overcomes irregularity.
Take my advice. For your next cold, take four-way cold tablets, the fast way to relieve those cold miseries.
Four-way, only 29 cents.
And now here's a word about another fine product of Grove Laboratories. To get rid of embarrassing dandruff in 3 minutes, change to Fitch Dandruff Remover Shampoo. 3 minutes with Fitch regularly is guaranteed to keep unsightly dandruff away forever. Apply Fitch before wetting hair, rub in 1 minute. Add water, lather 1 minute. Then rinse 1 minute. Every trace of dandruff goes down the drain. 3 minutes with Fitch and embarrassing dandruff's gone. At the same time, Fitch can brighten hair up to 35%. Get Fitch Dandruff Remover Shampoo today. And now, Act Two of yours truly, Johnny Dollar and the Evaporated Clue Matter.
But why Alaska?
Because that's where Carlton Kenworthy says he was when his grandpappy was murdered.
Well, Randy, that ought to be easy enough to check out.
So I did, Johnny. He made the airline reservation. He was aboard the plane. He got the Juno on Monday afternoon. He got himself a room at the Baranoff Hotel.
You checked out with the hotel?
By telephone.
Why was he up there?
Who knows? But the hotel says he was.
Well, what did he do with himself?
Apparently took in some of the night spots and flew on back here on Thursday morning. Checked him all the way through.
And his grandfather died on Tuesday.
Oh, Parker.
Here's a report on that poker, Lieutenant.
Oh, good.
The prints were pretty badly smudged, but they managed to nail down a couple of them.
Oh, whose? Yeah, look at this, Johnny.
Yes, sir. One print from the deceased
and a couple made by Carlton Kenworthy.
Yes, sir.
And why not, Lieutenant?
Huh? Kenworthy.
After all, as I told you several times, I've often made up the fire for my grandfather there in his apartment. So is there any reason why my fingerprints shouldn't be on that poker that was used to kill him?
Hmm?
He's got a point there, Randy.
Well, listen.
Of course I have.
The fact remains...
And didn't this officer say the prints of both myself and my grandfather were badly smudged?
Yes.
So, whoever did it wiped off his own prints and part of ours.
Quite possible, Randy.
The fact remains,
Kenworthy. The fact remains that I was in Alaska when my grandfather was murdered.
Why, Carlton?
Just a little trip, a little fun, just... Who are you?
Johnny Dollar, investigator for the insurance company.
Well, Dollar, I certainly hope you can accomplish more than these stupid police have. Listen, of all the stumbling, bumbling... Well,
that's all, Parker.
Yes, sir.
Well, Lieutenant, that silly look on your face...
Because I think you killed him. Because you're the only one with any reason
to... But I didn't,
to.
Of course. How could I?
Hey, tell me this, Carlton.
I'll tell you anything I can, Mr. Dollar, if you'll get this incompetent flatfoot off my neck.
Kenworthy...
And, of course, help to solve the murder of my poor, sweet... kind old grandfather.
Okay, okay. Did you make that trip to Alaska alone?
Yes, that's right.
Okay, thanks.
That's all?
That's all. For now.
Very well. And will you keep me advised, Lieutenant, if by some stroke of luck you should happen to make some progress for a change?
Get out, Kenworthy.
Gladly.
Just be sure you stay around, that you don't leave town.
Don't be silly, Lieutenant. Why should I?
Johnny, so help me if that guy... If I
Okay, okay. Just give me one thing, Randy. An address.
Huh?
Yeah. I could see why Randy'd harbor no love for Carlton Kenworthy. His attitude there at headquarters got into my skin, too. Expense account item three, a dollar even for a cab to Alan Barker's apartment. And I saw immediately why Randy had said they were like two peas in a pod. Despite the fact Carlton was a good deal huskier. They were so much alike, I wondered if there was some blood relationship.
Hardly, Mr. Dollar. We're simply good friends, that's all. Our tastes are alike in liquor and women. We like to do the same things, and... Well, that's why we get along so well together, why we're known as the Inseparables.
Alan, did you know that Carlton was going to Alaska?
I certainly did. I drove him to his plane on Monday, and on Thursday I met his return flight and drove him back to his flat. Missed him like the very devil, incidentally.
You keep a car here in the city?
In the garage down in the basement.
What did you do while he was away?
Felt terribly at loose ends, but then I had my car washed and greased and took a long trip.
Oh, when?
I left Monday evening.
Where'd you go?
Oh, I drove several hundred miles. Took little side roads and byways that probably aren't even on the map.
Think perhaps you could retrace your route?
Good heavens, no. Oh, I did end up somewhere near Albany before starting back Wednesday morning.
Uh-huh. Did you stay in Albany?
My memory's a bit vague, Mr. Dollar, but I'm quite sure I didn't.
Well, where did you stay over?
Well, this may sound fantastic to you.
Where?
But I haven't the least idea. I took a couple of bottles with me. And they, coupled with the fact I was in completely unfamiliar country and that at night one little roadside motel looked as good as any other, well, I just don't know.
You know, you make things sound pretty bad for yourself, Alan.
I beg your pardon?
Considering the way you've been sponging off Carlton Kenworthy... Well, offhand, I'd say you had as much reason to want his grandfather out of the way as he did.
I beg your
pardon. And without a very good explanation of your whereabouts at the time of the murder.
Now, look here, Dollar.
But you know something? I don't think you have enough guts to have made those lily-white hands of yours wield that poker.
Ugh, horrid thought.
And yet, on the other hand...
Well, yes, Dollar?
As an accessory.
Accessory?
That's right. I'll see you later, Alan.
Now, look here.
Just don't leave town. Carlton, possibly. Alan, well, I don't know. I don't pretend to be an expert judge of character. But I'd swear that Alan wasn't capable of killing a man. And yet, as Randy had said, unless we could somehow break Carlton's alibi. And then I got an idea. It would take time, it would be expensive. But with $189,000 of insurance involved, yeah, I decided to take a flyer. Stick my neck out all the way.
And now, Act Three of yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Expense account item four, $489.54. That's a round-trip plane ticket to Juneau, Alaska, by way of Seattle, Washington. It wasn't until we got there that I suddenly realized I'd been pretty stupid. In spite of the fact that Alan looked very much like him, I should have taken along a picture of Carlton Kenworthy. And certainly I should have taken along a set of his fingerprints for comparison with any I might be able to pick up, or even a sample of his handwriting. But I didn't, so I'd have to work things out the best I could. Item five, $10 for miscellaneous taxi fares. Item six, $10 for a room at the Baranoff Hotel. And yes, I got the same story Randy Singer had about Carlton's having been there, having spent plenty of time at the bar in the bubble room, at nightclubs all over the town. But then it was item seven, $8.50 for some drinks and dinner in the main dining room that finally did the trick. Yeah, that pointed out the one small, seemingly insignificant way in which I could either prove or disprove Kenworthy's alibi. Believe me, seldom has the solution of a murder case hung on such a slender thread. Anyhow, less than 36 hours after I'd left New York, I was back at Idlewild Airport. Item 8, 10 cents for a phone call to Randy Singer. Item 9, $7.50 for a fast taxi into 18th Precinct Headquarters.
Johnny, where you been anyway?
Did you get in touch with Carlton?
He's right here in my office.
Good boy, Randy. Well, hello, Carlton.
Ungodly hour to drag a man out of bed and over here.
Yeah, have a bad night of it?
Al and I did do the town a bit. Have you found some lead, I believe you call it, on the killer of my grandfather?
Yeah, maybe.
Do you mind if I sit down?
Maybe you'd better. Where were you when your grandfather was murdered?
Why, I've told you, Juneau, Alaska.
You know Alaska pretty well?
I know nothing about it. This is my first trip and a very brief one.
You stayed at the Baranoff Hotel?
That's right. Check with them and you'll find I was there on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday.
Hmm. Did you eat there at the hotel?
My dinners, yes. But I fail to see what that...
Just answer my questions, will you, please?
Why not?
Okay, now. Monday night. Cocktails in the bubble room?
That's right. But what difference could that possibly...
And what did you have for dinner?
Now, that's a stupid question.
Yeah? But if I can prove you weren't where you say you were when your grandfather was killed...
If you can, Dollar, and I know that you can't, but if you could, I would gladly confess to this murder, regale you with gruesome details, tell you anything you like.
Wise guy.
I asked you what you had for dinner Monday night there at the Baranoff.
Oh, I see. You think if I say I had something that wasn't on the menu that
Just
night...
Just answer my question.
Or perhaps you'll check to see if the dinner was put on my bill, so I'd have to sign for it, leave a sample of my handwriting. But I paid cash for everything.
I asked about your dinner. Well?
Dollar, of all the asinine, idiotic... Shrimp cocktail, a salad, a steak, and some coffee.
You get that stuff anywhere.
But now, Dollar...
Mike?
What?
The coffee.
Really, if this is detective work, if this nonsensical questioning...
Well?
No, Mr. Dollar. I had my coffee with cream and sugar.
Oh, you ordered cream.
I used the cream that was on the table. Look here, now, of all the silly, absurd, childish
cream things... was on the table?
Of course it was.
Real cream?
Yes, yes, and the sugar was real sugar.
That's beside the point.
But what you hope to gain by all this, stupid... Oh, you mean you solved this heinous crime without knowing about the sugar, little boy?
That's right. Because you'd already told me you were never there.
What?
Because Alan went up there instead, didn't he? Using your name to establish an alibi for you.
Now, what miraculous deduction leads you
to... Because of your certainty about that cream on the table.
Of course I'm certain. Doesn't any decent restaurant put cream on the table?
No, not up there.
What?
What's that, Johnny?
But he didn't tell me that.
I don't know why, Randy. Maybe no big dairy farms yet. Maybe just plain habit. Maybe they like it better.
Dollar, how did you find out
about
that?
But on every table, even in the best places, you'll find no cream. But a little can of evaporated milk. Like to check on it?
Well, I'll be doggone.
It was Alan. Did Alan tell you that? Did Alan give me away because he thought he could get the money if I knew he was my friend only because of the money I could give him, but listen, he's as guilty as I am, Mr. Dollar.
Is he?
Of course he is, because he helped me kill my grandfather. Well, isn't he? I'll prove it. I'll prove I couldn't have killed him without his help. Do you hear me, Dollar? Do you hear me?
You think that's going to help you in court? Believe me, if I were to put down all I think about the Alan Barkers and Carlton Kenworthys and all the rest of that rotten... why bother? What's the use? Expense account total, including incidentals and the trip back to Hartford, $574 even. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Now, here's our star with a word or two about next week's program.
And a welcome to a couple of more stations that have joined us. WBRK in Pittsfield, Massachusetts, and WKNY over in Kingston, New York. We're glad to have you with us. And man, how this network grows and grows. As for next week, well, I wonder just how you'd feel sitting on top of a nuclear explosive device, knowing the darn thing may go off any second and blow you to kingdom come. I know how I feel. And I'll tell you all about it on my program next Sunday, as usual, right here on the CBS radio station that brings you all the best in programming. The story's a real cliffhanger, and I'm sure you'll like it. Join us, won't you? Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Truly, Johnny Dollar, starring Bob Bailey, originates in Hollywood and is written, produced, and directed by Jack Johnstone. Heard in our cast were Harry Bartell, Herb Vigran, Carlton G. Young, Herb Ellis, and Jack Edwards. Be sure to join us next week, same time and station, for another exciting story of yours truly, Johnny Dollar. This is Dan Coverley speaking.
Suspense follows on the CBS Radio Network.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, on Tuned to Yesterday, a CBS broadcast from the 17th of January, 1960. This is an hour of mystery on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Now star Frank Lovejoy appears in an episode of Nightbeat with the female lead being Joan Banks, his wife in real life. Their first recorded on-air pairing would be in that November on the Columbia Workshop series, in a play called I Get the Blues from Reviews. This episode of Nightbeat Next, featuring Lovejoy and Banks, is called A Case of Butter, from September 25th, 1950, on NBC.
Randy Stone. I cover the night beat for the Chicago Star. Stories start in many different ways. This one began with a crash on the highway and ended with a whole city fighting for its life.
Night Beat, starring Frank Lovejoy as Randy Stone.
Joe's Diner is located about 10 miles out of town on the highway going north to St. Paul. Joe caters to the truck drivers who wrestle those big 20-ton diesel jobs. You know, the ones that scare the pants off you when you have to edge over to the side of the road so that they can pass. It's strictly a man's spot. The steaks are juicy, and the conversation even juicier. I stop in there once in a while myself to take on a little of Joe's home cooking and improve my vocabulary, like tonight.
Hey, what's all right, with these? They still alive.
Joe, I'm going to get my truck
rolled. Oh, how many hands you think I got? Like an octopus?
I grabbed a stool at the counter and waited for Joe to catch up with me. Ah, Joe, scrambled eggs when you get to it.
I'll be with you in a minute, Mr. Stone.
Fried and butter, Joe. Lots of butter.
How else?
Good, good. I'm starved.
Huh? 9 o'clock, and you ain't had your supper yet?
No, that's breakfast. I'm just starting out.
Oh, you're as bad as one of these truck drivers. Here, this'll hold you.
Joe banged a cup of coffee on the counter in front of me, and then it happened. It was a desperate shriek of brakes and a terrific crash out on the highway. In 5 seconds, a dozen men were on their feet racing for the door. Holy mackerel. Call the cops, Joe. Tell them to send an ambulance. It was almost a quarter of a mile away, but long before I got there, I could make out the shape of a big semi-trailer truck and jammed into its rear end a brand new sedan. still had about 100 yards to go when the truck roared up and started pulling itself loose from the wrecked car. Get his license number, somebody! But the guy on the truck hadn't put his lights on, and he pulled away before anyone could get close enough. The sedan was there over on one side, and it was a mess. The boys got the car right side up and dragged the driver out. He was soused to the gills. In a little while, the cops were there working him over. And then I saw this other guy over by the ditch across the road. Hey, you all right?
Run out on me. Run out.
Who ran out on you? Are you hurt?
Look, mister, I got to get away from here.
Oh, I see you're in the truck.
Yeah, I was in the truck. Look, I got to see a doctor, this hand of mine.
Cops will take care of it for you until the ambulance gets here.
I don't need no ambulance.
There's another one over here, Sergeant.
Okay.
I tell you, I can make it okay.
Well, hello, Stone. How did you get here? Fly?
Hi, Sarge.
This fellow in the wreck?
He was in the truck.
Yeah? What's your name?
Harry Waldo.
Driver's helper?
No, I just bummed a ride. The guy gave me a ride about 100 miles back.
Huh? Where do you live?
Here, Chicago.
You get the license number of the truck?
No, I didn't pay no attention.
What was the driver's name, Waldo?
Well, I didn't ask him.
Well, who was he driving for? Was there a sign on the truck?
No, it was dark when he picked me up. I didn't notice.
What was he hauling?
What should I know? I just bummed around. Say, who is this guy, officer? Do I have to answer his questions?
It won't hurt any.
Was it a refrigerated truck?
No, it wasn't.
Well, that's the first thing you seem sure of. How come?
Well, it was kind of all beat up and... Well, it just didn't seem like no icebox, that's all.
This guy's trying to play hide-and-go-seek with you, Sergeant. That truck was a cooler, and he knows it.
How come you're so sure?
Ammonia gas. Can't you smell it? It's all over the place, including your overalls. Hose connection must have broken in the crack-up.
Look, wise guy, whoever you are...
Randy Stone, Chicago Star.
This officer wasn't
come
here.
Come on. None of that now.
Okay. I'm in the truck. There's a crash, and I get out to see what hit us. And while I'm on the ground, a truck driver pulls out on me. So what does that make me, a suspect in a murder case, or just paperboy just looking for a story?
Oh, sure. I'm always looking for a story. Brother, this sure has the makings of one. A fish story. The sergeant got a few more vital statistics on Harry Waldo and then let him go with the usual business about keeping in touch in case the police wanted him for further questioning. After the mob cleared, I went over the area again in the dark. There was nothing. In the ditch, I noticed a battered-up wooden box, the kind they ship butter in. There was nothing there. So I went back into Joe's and phoned the story into my paper. I told the city desk where I could be reached, and then I got busy on that much-delayed order of scrambled eggs. Oh, they're good, Joe.
Hey, the others got cold. I made them fresh. Lots of butter, the way you like.
Thanks, Joe. Hey,
you know, can't get over that truck running out on the crash. What do you want to do that for? Must have known it wasn't his fault.
Who knows, Joe? Maybe he had a date. You know?
Yeah.
Hello? Joe's Diner. Joe's talking. Yeah. Hold on.
It's for you, Mr. Stone. Take it in the booth.
Okay, thank you. Hello.
Andy, this is Mac on the desk.
Oh, well, that figures.
On that crash story you phoned in, is that all you can give us?
What else do you want?
How about the truck? What was it hauling?
I'm sorry, Mac. All I know is what I phoned in.
Did you ask around?
Well, of course I asked. Nobody knows. If you'd like to send out one of your better men for a follow-up...
Oh, funny stuff, Randy. Could the truck have been hauling butter?
Butter? Why?
Something came in on the wires this afternoon. I thought we could tie it in with the truck running out.
How?
I'll read it to you. It's dateline Emerson, Manitoba, Canada. This city, hard hit by recent floods, reports theft of 21 tons of contaminated butter, which was being removed from the Ajax Creamery for disposal.
Contaminated?
The condemned butter, bearing the trade name of Dandy D, had been submerged for 3 weeks in stagnant sewage water because of recent flood conditions. Health authorities have expressed fears the butter may become the cause of a widespread typhoid epidemic.
Typhoid?
You think there could be any connection, Randy?
20 tons of typhoid fever in Chicago?
It makes sense, Randy. It's only a little over 900 miles from the border, 2 days by fast truck. And it's a cinch. They'd have a tough time getting rid of it any closer. Randy, you still there?
Yeah. I'm not feeling so good when I'm here.
What's the matter with you?
Just feeling that I'm on the verge of a story, one that I can do without. I ran back out to the ditch where I'd seen the wooden box. It was there, all right. My heart sank when I lit a match and read the words, Number One Creamery Butter, Canada. Then I kicked the box over and saw a couple of greasy packages. There was some sort of a wrapping on them. When I read the words Dandy D, I began feeling bugs crawling down my throat. I went back to Joe's and got all the newspaper I could find and a pair of cotton gloves to boot. Then I picked up the box, put it in my car, and drove down to the Star. Mac's eyes popped through his glasses when he saw it. He got some Board of Health official out of bed and gave him the story over the phone. By the time we were through taking pictures, they had a crew of experts there to haul the stuff down to the lab for analysis. In the meantime, I helped Mac fix up a spread for the morning paper in the biggest, blackest type we had.
Well, will that make you feel any better, Randy?
Yeah, it sure does. That warning ought to make a suspect out of every pound of butter in town. Nobody could possibly buy the stuff now. They'll have to ditch it.
Randy, there's over $10,000 worth of butter on that truck. Typhoid or no typhoid, those guys are going to try to sell it.
But how can they?
No trick to change the wrapper. There's only one way to stop them. Find the truck.
Oh, yeah. I'll tell them that down at police headquarters.
Yeah. Wait a minute.
All right.
Close that door. City desk. Yeah, Mac talking. Oh, you did? You sure? Yeah. Yeah, we'll do all we can. Yeah, thanks for calling.
Who was it?
On your way down to police headquarters, Randy, you can take a little time out to pray. That was the lab man from the Board of Health.
Well, what was the verdict?
That butter is crawling with pestilence and death.
Typhoid?
Pestilence and death. Those were his exact words.
NBC is bringing you Night Beat, starring Frank Lovejoy as Randy Stone. The NBC chimes are laughing, but they're not keeping the reason a secret. They want everyone to know they're laughing in anticipation of the mad and merry antics in store with two NBC fall favorites, Bob Hope and Groucho Marx. Hope returns to the air over most of these stations on Tuesday evening, October 3rd, just 1 week from tomorrow. Groucho Marx brings his laugh-filled quiz game, You Bet Your Life, to NBC, beginning Wednesday, October 4th. Listen when you hear the three chimes for laughs and more laughs with Bob Hope on October 3rd and Groucho Marx on October 4th. And now back to Night Beat and Randy Stone.
At first, the police treated the typhoid butter story like it was a circulation builder for the Star. But bad news travels fast, and by the time I got in to see Police Chief Captain Sorensen, he'd heard all about it. He was a very worried man.
Oh, hello, Randy. Come down to help me word my resignation?
Oh, it's that bad, huh?
Haven't got a thing.
What about that Waldo fellow who was on the truck? Have you picked him up?
He forgot to arrive home after the accident.
Well, that truck's got a holdup someplace.
I've set up roadblocks. I've sent out patrols. There's not a back alley in this city that won't be searched tonight. But we still have no real description of the truck.
Well, have you checked all cold storages and creameries?
First thing, nothing's come in.
You know, Mac thinks they may change the wrappers on the butter. Maybe if you call the printer...
No good, Randy. You can buy wax butter wrappers in any paper supply house. This thing has been pretty well thought out.
Well, no use my adding to the confusion around here. I mind if I go down to this Waldo's place and have a look around?
Of course not. It's a boarding house over on St. Mary's Avenue. But look out for the old lady who runs the place. She'll talk you into a corner and keep you there.
Don't worry about me, Captain. With little old ladies, I come out fighting all the time. It was 11:30 when I pulled up in front of Harry Waldo's address. It was one of those sad-looking houses that seemed to be held together by memories of what they used to be 40 years ago. Now there was a sign in front that read, Furnished Rooms, Mrs. Angela Barr. I rang and waited. Someone had drawn the curtains apart a little and was giving me the once-over.
Yes?
Mrs. Barr?
Yes, what is it?
Can you open the door, please? It's urgent.
Goodness gracious, you police are the most persistent...
I'm not with the police, Mrs. Barr.
Not with the police? But you must be. They've been coming and going all night long.
No, no, no. I'm a newspaper reporter on the Star. My name is
Red. A newspaper reporter? What a pleasant surprise. I declare I'm so excited. You must come in the kitchen and I'll make a cup of coffee.
No, no, thanks very much. You're very kind, but I really
what
must...
What did you say your name was?
Stone, Randy Stone.
Oh, yes, of course. You sure you wouldn't like some coffee?
No, nothing, thank you.
Mrs. Barr! Oh, goodness, she's awake.
Mrs. Barr, who is it?
It's all right, Nancy. It's just a visitor. Go back to sleep, dear. Now, there's nothing to be afraid of. Your mother will be home in a little while. Just go back to sleep like a good girl.
All right.
That's quite a cough.
Yes, the child has had such a cold. Poor Ellen is worried sick about her.
Ellen?
Her mother, Ellen Spencer. She's one of my tenants.
Oh, yes. Look, Mrs. Barr, I wanted to ask you some questions about another of your tenants.
Oh, yes. Mr. Waldo. The police have been bothering me all night. Whatever has he done? The police wouldn't tell me.
Well, he's done plenty. He's stolen a truckload of butter from the flood area up north.
Stolen?
Well, that's not all. That butter is contaminated with typhoid. If it ever gets into circulation,
oh,
we'll...
Oh, how dreadful. How very dreadful.
Mrs. Barr, I have a favor to ask.
Now, how could I possibly do you a favor, Mr. Stone?
I'd like to have a look at Mr. Waldo's room.
But the police have already been through his room.
Yes, I know, but you know how it is when you've got to write a story. There's nothing like seeing it firsthand.
But at this time of night, do I have to let you in?
Well, legally, no.
Well, then,
You mean you refuse?
Not exactly. Only, surely a rich and powerful paper like the Star... Now that Mr. Waldo has disappeared, I'm sure I'll never get the rent he owes me.
Yes, I see. Now, how much?
Oh, dear. Money is so hard to come by when you're old and alone. Now, if I had the $50 Mr. Waldo
owes
me...
It's worth $10.
So little?
Oh.
Oh, but then, you're such a nice young man. And I do enjoy your newspaper so much. I'll take it.
Her bright little eyes glistened as she took the 10 spot. Well, I guess it's like that when you're old. You can't eat too well, you can't sleep too well. You see life slipping by, but a 10 spot is something you can smooth out, put away, and look at again and again. Mrs. Barr followed me around as I went through Waldo's room. For a change, she had very little to say. I opened the drawers in his dresser. I looked under the bed. The kid in the next room was coughing again. I opened the closet door and the smell that hit me was sharply familiar. Ammonia. In the corner, I picked up a pair of overalls that were saturated with the stuff. My friend Waldo had been home and changed. The phone downstairs started to ring.
Oh, dear, the telephone.
Want me to go down and answer?
No, no, it's probably Ellen. She's so worried about the child. Will you come down now?
Just another minute.
Oh, dear, oh, dear. You won't be long.
I'd like to borrow these overalls, if it's all right. Probably covered with germs.
Hello.
Wow, hello.
What are you doing in Mr. Waldo's room? Are you a burglar?
No. No, of course not. I'm one of Mr. Waldo's friends.
Then can you tell me when my Uncle Jim is coming back? He was going to bring me something from his trip.
Well, that's nice. Where did Uncle Jim go?
He went away with Mr. Waldo in the truck. But Mr. Waldo is back and not Uncle Jim.
Oh, does he drive a truck, your Uncle Jim?
He doesn't drive it. He owns it. And he gives me a ride in it, too.
Mm-hmm. Your Uncle Jim live here?
Oh, yes. Uncle Jim is my really real uncle. He and my mommy are brothers.
Oh, yes, I see.
Nancy, you naughty child.
Mrs. Barr.
The idea of getting out of bed.
I heard a noise.
Back to bed with you, child. That was your mother on the phone.
All right, Mrs. Barr. Good night, Mr. Burglar.
Good night, Nancy.
Imagine that child leaving her bed. Was she with you long, Mr. Stone?
Oh, no, just
She just told me she had an Uncle Jim.
Oh, yes. That's Ellen's brother. He's one of my other roomers.
I understand he owns a truck.
He's someplace in Ohio now, I believe. Been gone almost a month.
Couldn't have been Canada.
Christians. You simply have to excuse me. I must give that child her medicine. Good night, Mr. Stone.
I'd used up my $10 worth of welcome, so I drove over to police headquarters and filled in Captain Sorensen on Harry Waldo's overalls and little Nancy's Uncle Jim. It was his first lead. He called motor vehicles and ordered a fast check on the truck owned by Jim Spencer, and then he started briefing me on the more recent developments.
The city's in a panic, Randy. Warnings have been going out on the radio every 15 minutes. We've been flooded with calls from the mayor down.
Uh-huh.
Anyone with a gut ache is sure it's typhoid and wants us to send down a doctor. Come in.
Here's the dope on the truck, Captain.
Now we're getting somewhere. All right. Broadcast this and keep repeating it every half hour. Get it?
Yes, sir.
We'll get him now.
Well, you might try and sound a little more convincing. I left Sorensen chewing his upper lip. Then I headed for the Blue Angel and a little talk with Jim Spencer's sister, Ellen. The Blue Angel wasn't meant to lure the better-class citizen away from his hearth and home. It smelled of stale beer and looked as if it were being lit by half a dozen firefighters. I found an empty booth and asked the waitress if Ellen Spencer worked there. And after a while, a girl came over. She was attractive in a tired sort of way.
You ask for me?
Will you sit down, Ellen? I've got to talk to you.
I brought you some drinks. It's the rules here. If we sit with a customer, they got to buy us drinks.
That's okay.
What'd you want?
To talk.
What about?
Your brother, Jim.
You a cop?
No.
What about Jim?
Where is he?
I don't know. What business is it of yours?
When did your brother and Harry Waldo leave on their last trip?
A week ago.
Mrs. Barr said Jim was in Ohio.
Ah, that old hag. She's in his second childhood.
Mm-hmm. Jim hasn't phoned you tonight?
No. What's all the noise about, anyway? The kid gets scared and runs out on a traffic accident, so they'll catch him and give him 30 days. He'll be back.
Who told you about it?
I heard it over the radio.
Really? How did you know it was Jim?
Well,
You spoke to Harry?
Yeah. He phoned me to tell me Jim was all right.
Did he tell you they were hauling a load of stolen butter? Did you listen to the warnings over the radio about that butter? It's loaded with typhoid, that stuff is.
Oh, that's a lie. Just a smart police gag to get the butter back.
Harry tell you that, too? We got some of that butter, Ellen. It's been soaked in sewer bilge for a month.
Jim wouldn't touch anything like that. He's a good kid.
Maybe Jim thinks it's a gag, too. Might even get to eat some of the stuff.
I don't know what you're talking about. Look, mister, I'd better go back to work.
Hey, Ellen, you wanted on a phone.
I'll have to leave now.
If you hear from Jim, tell him what he's up against.
Yeah. Yeah, I will.
And tell him to wash his hands. Good. I followed her to the phone booth or whatever the call was. It was brief. She hung right up, so I went outside, watched her through the door. In a few minutes, she came out wearing her coat. I slipped around the corner, watched her climb into a cab. I jumped into my car and followed. The cab stopped in front of her house. I parked my car half a block away, waited until all the lights went off, and then I got out and walked around to the back of the house. Somewhere inside were the directions to that missing butter. It was easy raising one of the kitchen windows. I climbed in. I stood for a minute, getting used to the dark. And then suddenly a switch flicked on, and the place was flooded with light. Randy Stone, Esquire, standing there, stupidly blinking his eyes. Ellen walked a few steps toward me. She didn't scream. She didn't holler.
Isn't this carrying your job a little too far?
I knocked on the door, but nobody answered, so I turned the knob.
Well, turn it again and get out.
Somebody phoned you just before I left the Blue Angel. Was that Jim?
That's none of your business. Now get out.
If I go, Ellen, the place will be swarming with police in 15 minutes.
What do you mean?
Just this. You know where Jim is. If you won't tell me, you'll have to tell the cops. And when you do, you'll be involved. They'll make you an accessory.
Well, let them.
Where's the old lady?
Out for a drive.
At 1:30 in the morning?
She's the one who phoned me. She said she was going batty with cops hanging around. She had to get out of the house.
Ellen, for the last time, where's Jim?
I told you before, I don't know.
They're closing in on him. You'll be doing him a favor if they get him before he sold any of that stuff.
Oh, are you still working that typhoid gag?
It's no gag, believe me. You want the lab report on
it? No.
All right, then listen to it this way. Maybe you'll understand it. A kid sits down to eat, and his mother hands him a piece of bread and butter, only it's not butter. Something has been lying around in the filthy sewer water for a long time. 10 or 11 days, a kid gets sick, like your kid. He's burning with fever one minute, and the next minute he's as cold as ice. His tongue is thick and his guts feel like they're bursting. That's what typhoid is
Stop
like.
Stop it, will you?
If a good doctor gets to him, the kid may live. Lots of kids may not be that lucky, Ellen. Also, you can keep your kid brother out of jail.
Look, I don't know where he is.
When did you talk to Walter?
He phoned me at the club. He laughed about that typhoid
stuff. Where did he phone from?
I don't know. Someplace in town. Now, let me alone.
Would that be
I'll
it?
I'll take that.
No, you won't. Ellen made a grab for the phone, but I beat her to it. She clawed at me. I had to get rough, but I got the receiver. Hello.
This is the long-distance operator.
Yes?
On your call to Elwood, we are unable to contact Mr. Jim Spencer. Shall we continue to try?
No, thank you. Was that Elwood?
Yes, sir. Elwood, Illinois. Thank you, sir.
That was it, so they'd gone on to Elwood. I called Captain Sorensen. He picked me up in a squad car with two of his best men. It was a 70-mile ride to Elwood, and we made it in a little over an hour. It was after 3 a.m. when the clerk at the only hotel in town showed us his register. There was no Waldo and no Spencer. Then Sorensen got a bright idea. He asked the clerk if there was a creamery in town. There wasn't. No cold storage plant either. Just old Mayor Hoskins' ice house down the road. We jumped into a car and drove over. That's nothing but an old barn.
Oh, there's a light around the back.
Randy, you come with me. You two cut around the other side of the building.
Right.
Oh, there's the truck, you see it?
Yeah.
All right, give me a lift, Captain. I'll see if I can get a look in through the window. It's Waldo.
They got the butter?
Yep, yep. There's the other one. That must be Spencer.
Well, get down. We'll take them now. All right, Spencer, get him up.
Jim, the law.
Those hands up, Spencer. You're covered.
You too, Waldo. Don't try anything.
Who's trying anything?
Hold it, Captain. Hold it. Somebody else is coming.
Kill the lights. We'll make a sound, you two, if you want to live.
We pulled the big door shut, flicked off the lights, and waited in the dark. Guns pressed into Waldo and Spencer. A car had pulled up outside. Whoever it was seemed to be having a time with the door. And then finally it opened and the lights went on. Mrs. Barr.
Oh, goodness. How you startled me. Why, it's Mr. Stone. Have you been waiting long? And here I thought my lazy boys had gone to sleep.
No, no, they haven't.
And I suppose Harry Waldo has told you all about me. I just know he did.
Well, not everything. That is, not yet he hasn't.
I just knew that boy had no character. And now I suppose you want to take me back to the city. But I hate Chicago in June. I don't think I'll go with you. Don't come any closer.
Drop it, lady. Okay, mother. Randy, get the gun.
Yep.
Lady, don't you know these things explode?
Now, wasn't that foolish of me? I was going to try to get away. But where could I have gone? Where could an old lady go and hide? I do believe I'm getting senile. Isn't that a horrible word, Mr. Stone?
Mrs. Barr, this is no joking matter. Don't you understand that butter could have caused an epidemic?
Why, of course. Isn't it terrible?
Yet you were willing to sell it?
You didn't think I was going to eat it myself, did you? It was all I could do to look at the horrible stuff. But $10,000. That's such a lot of money to a poor, poor old lady. Such a lot of money.
A.M. and it's all buttoned up. Oh, brother, what a nightmare if a thing like that had ever happened. And all from ignorance and greed. What's that old wheeze about money being the root of all evil? Well, it's not just money. There's got to be a touch of insanity sprinkled in along with it. Like that poor old lady. Poor? When the cops ran a make on her, they uncovered a fascinating record of over 50 years of criminal history, not to mention a dozen bank accounts. Guess she didn't trust banks any too much. Such a sweet old doll. Well, at least I got to see the sun come up this morning while we were driving back, climbing up into the sky like a great big yellow ball of butter. Oh, no, what am I saying? Copy, boy.
Now,
Night Beat, starring Frank Lovejoy, is produced and directed by Warren Lewis and edited by Larry Marcus. Tonight's story was written by Lou Russoff and Russell Bender with music by Frank Worth. The part of Harry was played by Don Diamond. Jane Morgan was Mrs. Barr. Others in tonight's cast were Joan Banks, Nestor Paiva, Peter Leeds, Ann Whitfield, and Tudor Owen. Frank Lovejoy may currently be seen in Milton Sperling's production Three Secrets, released by Warner Brothers. And now, here again is the star of our program, Frank Lovejoy.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, here's important news about Night Beat. Next week, we're moving to Friday evenings over most of these stations. That's beginning 1 week from this Friday on October 6th. You'll hear Night Beat at 9 o'clock Eastern Standard Time on Friday. So would you listen then to our next adventure 11 days from tonight. I'll see you on Friday, October 6th. Good night.
Listen on Friday, October 6th and every week as Randy Stone searches through the city for the strange stories waiting for him in the darkness. Night Beat came to you from Hollywood. Three chimes mean good times on NBC. Friday, October 6th means the return of Chester A. Riley, played by William Bendix, in the hilarious The Life of Riley. Mom, Babs, Junior, Digger O'Dell, and the entire cast will be on hand to join in the fun. Saturday, October 7th is the day when Dennis Day and Judy Canova will be back on the air. Make a listening date now. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
Night Beat, on Tuned to Yesterday, an NBC episode from the 25th of September, 1950. And that brings the curtain down on this hour of mystery on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's golden era. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. Thanks for listening.